13-25-00009 CB, Texas Department of Transportation versus Kenneth Lynn Bridgman and Suzanne Lynette Bridgman.
May it please the court. We're here this morning because of a motorcycle accident that happened on the I-37 frontage road near Sinton, Texas. Today, the Texas Department of Transportation asked this court to reverse the judgment of the trial court and render a take-nothing judgment for the following reasons. The condition, the rough patch of pavement that the Bridgmans encountered on that I-37 road was not a special defect. And because it was not a special defect, the Bridgmans were required to show at trial actual knowledge on behalf of TxDOT, which they have not done. And for these reasons, TxDOT will be requesting that the trial court's judgment be reversed and a take-nothing judgment be rendered. First issue, this condition. We've called it in briefing a rough patch of pavement. We've called it a pothole. We've called it base failure. But what this thing is not a special defect. So what is it? Where do we start? We look at the thing, the condition of the road. What guidance do we have? We have the Texas Tort Claims Act. The Texas Tort Claims Act does not give us a strict definition of what a special defect is, but it does liken special defects unto obstructions and excavations on roads, highways, and streets.
Yeah, it says like obstruction or an excavation, and then I think it's York and some other cases like York say that we have to strictly construe those, that anything outside of an excavation or an obstruction would not be a special defect. Is that the position of the state?
Yes, Your Honor. The Supreme Court has never expanded the Texas Tort Claims Act. It has rigidly, in its case law, held to this like an excavation or obstruction that prevents an ordinary user of the roadway from traveling down a road. The Supreme Court has not deviated from that definition. In the briefing by both parties, we have one case in particular that is cited by both sides, the Eaton case, because this is the only time the Texas Supreme Court has ever found a condition to be a special defect. And in that case, the condition was described by the court as a ditch covering the road, measuring 6 to 10 inches in some spots and as wide as 9 feet in others. Described by the court as impassable by anyone traveling down that road could not stay on the road and miss that defect. Unlike the Eaton case, we have the condition here. The pictures that before the court clearly show that this condition is nothing. There's no resemblance to the condition described by the court in Eaton. We have here no measurements. We do not know.
In the other cases, they typically get into three measurements. I mean, we always know length, width, and depth. And it seems like depth is probably the most important one. And in this case, we don't get any information regarding the depth other than someone says it's large.
I agree, Judge. That is all the information that we have. We have no concise measurements. We have nothing more than the testimony and the photographs that are before the court now. And so based on what we have, this condition does not fall within this narrow definition of what a special defect is. The court in Payne said a special defect is the exception. It's not the rule. And because it is a special defect, it's not a special defect, pardon me. What the Bridgmans needed to show at trial was that TxDOT had actual knowledge of this specific condition at the time and the place that this accident occurred. What we do not have in the record is any such evidence. How would the Bridgmans have done so?
But don't they, or isn't there evidence that says that they inspected the highway every week, I think, with every Thursday, and that they should have seen it?
There was evidence that TxDOT has an aspiration to inspect the roadways every Thursday. There's evidence they may or may not have seen that. But what is important is when we're discussing what this condition is, if it's a licensee or an invitee standard, under the licensee standard under which this condition would fall, there is no duty to inspect. TxDOT likes to inspect, it wants to inspect, it wants to make the roads better, but there's not a duty to inspect under the licensee standard.
Then they have to have actual knowledge, not constructive knowledge, is that?
That is exactly right, Your Honor. Under a special defect, constructive knowledge is enough. But under a normal, ordinary premises defect, there has to be actual knowledge of that condition at the time, at the place when the accident occurred. We don't have that here. How could the bridge have demonstrated? The Supreme Court has given some examples, sometimes by way of previous accident reports, or if there were reports to TxDOT of the condition, then the TxDOT hadn't fixed it. But we don't have that here. We have.
You say that the road was repaired multiple times, and so it must have needed repair because from time to time it needs repair.
Well, Your Honor, that's just simply not enough. There is a whole line of cases, starting with CHMN Homes, Reyes v. City of Laredo, City of Dallas v. Reed, City of Dallas v. Thompson, that all tell us that knowledge that a condition could develop over time is not actual knowledge. Knowledge that a premises will deteriorate over time is not actual knowledge. Specifically, in the CMH Homes v. Danon case, it was not a pothole case or about a road case, but a case about a staircase, a wooden staircase that could potentially deteriorate over time. But in making their analysis, that court actually raised the issue of potholes being one of the things that people who build roads know over the course of time, potholes will develop. But that is not actual knowledge. Actual knowledge is knowledge that that this condition was known at the time and place to TxDOT, not that it could potentially have arisen, not that it had happened in the past. These do not rise to the level of actual knowledge. And that is to say, the bar is not low, it is a high bar. And there's no evidence of that in the record in this case.
I'm going to take you a little off track there. Initially, you complained that they were given both questions on licensee and invitee, and that you objected, and that's error. But how are you harmed by that? If they find the first one, but not the second one, I imagine if they find the invitee standard, that they have to have found the licensee initially. But if they meet all the elements for licensee, what's the harm?
And Your Honor, we did raise that, but we didn't brief it to the. And if it is, and it is harm, but the remedy for the two competing questions, for lack of better words, is sending us back to the trial court. And TxDOT doesn't want that. We don't want a new trial. We want this court to render a judgment that they take nothing. Now, on the issue you raised about the two, if they found for one and not the other, TxDOT's argument there is that there was simply there was legally insufficient evidence.
Did they even, I didn't look at the original petition in depth, but did they even plead the licensee standard?
I don't want to misquote. I think they pled it in the alternative. That's my belief as I stand here right now. Unless the
you talk a lot about the licensee standard, but let's say that we think it's a special defect. What part or what elements are you alleging that they did not meet with regards to the special defect?
Well, there's also there's a knowledge issue under the special defect analysis as well, a constructive knowledge, which is lower than actual knowledge, but it still requires some showing that TxDOT knew or should have known of this defect. And before we could even get into that analysis, we have to examine a point we briefed, which I had not intended to raise, but will raise, is the time notice rule. A time notice rule gives explains that we need a TxDOT needed time to find the condition and have time to remedy it through the ordinary course of reasonable care by going out and inspecting. There's no evidence here of how long this condition existed at all. What we do have are photographs of the section of road, but what the section of road shows are repairs made. What it does not show is potholes, base failures, broken pavement. What it shows is TxDOT was doing its job. It was finding hazards and it was fixing them. That's what's demonstrated in the photographs.
And then I noticed in the photographs, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there were some photographs after the fact where they had fixed the condition, right? They patched it.
Those are in the record, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, and it's been a while since I tried a case, but I don't seem to remember a rule where the subsequent remedial action was not admissible at trial.
It certainly isn't, Your Honor, but we like the jury to know that TxDOT fixes things when they find them, and so
that wasn't objected to then.
We elected not to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, we want people to know that when we find the hazards in the road, that we take all that TxDOT takes the efforts to repair them. If there are no other questions from the panel, I will reserve what remaining time I have for rebuttal and sit down.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court and opposing counsel. Well, I was prepared to come and say that the first issue that we need to deal with is this point that this condition cannot be an unreasonable risk of harm as a matter of law, starting with this Texas Supreme Court citation of United Supermarket. And I didn't hear any remarks about that, but it's still in the briefing, so I will just quickly, since there were no remarks about that, I will quickly cover that with this. The United Supermarket case dealt with a divot in the asphalt of a parking lot of a grocery store that the opinion said was 3/4 inch deep. And I would put to this court that we are not dealing with a 3/4 inch deep divot here, and that this condition is
also not dealing with someone walking in a parking lot.
True. That's right. I mean, this condition is on a roadway with a 55 mile an hour speed limit, a much more dangerous environment for a defect to exist in. So, you know, with no comments being made on directed at that, I don't want to ignore it because it's in the briefing. But I do think that that is an easy one to get by with saying this does not meet United Superway or the cases that follow in terms of a condition that cannot be, as a matter of law, an unreasonable risk of harm. So then that leaves us with one of two paths for the court to affirm the jury verdict and judgment below. And that is either a ordinary premises defect with actual knowledge or a special defect with knew or should have known. The other elements really aren't at play. Both of them required that the jury find an unreasonable risk of harm. The jury answered yes to both.
Well, but with so we could find it's not a special defect, and but also say that they met that you met the requirements of ordinary premises liability.
Oh, I think so. Yes,
but that gets us to the actual notice. So I mean, I think that's the big element in that one.
It is, and so I'm happy to address that first. So the courts are clear that actual knowledge can be established with circumstantial evidence. You don't have to have the defendant coming in saying, oh, we knew about it. It can be established with circumstantial evidence. The cases are cited on page 42 of our brief. One important aspect of this is that our legal principle is that knowledge of the condition by any employee of TxDOT is knowledge of TxDOT. And I cited the cases on page 47 of the brief. It's actually a Texas Supreme Court case from 2021, Los Compadres Pescadores. But in any event, knowledge of one employee is knowledge of the entire agency. We don't have to demonstrate with circumstantial evidence that this was agency-wide knowledge.
But I don't recall reading anywhere in the briefs that someone from TxDOT said, "I actually saw."
That's right. If we had that, we wouldn't need circumstantial evidence. We'd have direct evidence. But this was a circumstantial evidence case on the point of actual knowledge. And the circumstantial evidence that we have is this. First, it's the history of this very particular piece of roadway. I noticed in the reply brief of the state, they alluded to repairs nearby. But the testimony in the record is clear, and the photographs in the record are clear, that the years-long history is at this very spot. It's not repairs on this roadway nearby. It is this spot. Now, I will give you that the case law is clear, Supreme Court and otherwise, that if that's all the plaintiff had in this case, it could not rise to the level of circumstantial evidence of actual knowledge, the years-long history of it. But what the cases say that you can't rely upon that only. You have to have something else, something else. It doesn't mean that you can't consider that evidence. It is circumstantial, some circumstantial evidence, but you need something else. So in this case, we've got a years-long history, and we've got, it was actually Friday inspections. Every Friday, the Sinton office of TxDOT would send out a two-man crew to drive the northbound and southbound lanes of I-37 in San Patricio County with education, training, and instructions to look for conditions in the roadway that could be a problem area, including areas just like this one. Mr. Bomey, the maintenance supervisor, said, yes, this is the type of condition that we train our employees to look for and instruct them to look for when they go out and perform these inspections. And as they drive down the north and southbound lanes of I-37, they are to look at the frontage roads. The briefing of the state speaks a whole lot of Mr. Bomey saying, this condition could have gone, the photograph that you see on page 9 of our brief, he said this condition could have arisen overnight. We could have driven by it on the Friday before this Saturday, and it maybe wasn't there, which quite frankly seems impossible to me. If you look at the photographs of that condition, there are chunks of asphalt that are completely gone.
But was there testimony to contradict?
Yes. Yes, there is. And we pointed it out in our brief. Mr. Steidel, our roadway expert, testified that it would be at least 2 months for this kind of a condition to develop and to have chunks of asphalt disappear from the roadway. So we're talking about at least 2 months of Friday inspections. And we're talking about at a point in the roadway where there is a long history of repairs and failures. This is sufficient circumstantial evidence for the jury to find that they had actual knowledge. The jury could believe that one employee on one of those Fridays saw this condition, because it's only reasonable that they are educated, instructed, and taught to look for this exact kind of condition. Now, I wish I had a document to show you that they saw it. But Mr. Bomey, the maintenance supervisor, testified, well, if they see it, they either give me a call on the phone, or if I'm not available, they leave a post-it on my desk. No formal record is made of them seeing it. So we can't have a record of them seeing it. But we do have the testimony and evidence that every Friday they were out there looking for exactly this kind of condition at a spot that had to be there for at least 2 months, according to Mr. Steidel. And that's evidence that gets construed in favor of the jury verdict. They could completely reject Mr. Bowman's testimony that this hole could appear overnight. They could reject that. So we've got inspections every Friday for 2 months before this happens. And they could reasonably believe, the jury, that one of those employees saw it. And then that is knowledge of the TxDOT agency. I'm going to move to special defect. And we've already spoken, it's already been spoken of this morning, what the legislature has told us about it. This court in 2000 in Texas Department of Transportation versus O'Malley said an excavation or obstruction could be described as a condition that presents an unexpected and unusual danger to ordinary users of roadways. In 2023,
and does that mean all users? I know they talk about the ordinary prudent driver. Is that going to exclude some drivers? I mean, going to have to protect every single one of them, because riding a motorcycle, I think, is inherently more dangerous than a car. And I don't think anyone disagrees with that. So it's going to be more difficult for a motorcyclist to negotiate some hazards more than others.
And there's actually, the record supports that notion that it's more dangerous for motorcycles. I think
you assert, and I'm not sure whether it's correct, is that the accident speaks for itself.
Just because, I would,
But, sure. I mean, you wouldn't agree that another motorcycle may have negotiated that at a different speed. I mean, it can't be every single one of them, because you could have someone exceeding the speed limit that would be more hazardous than some who could be driving slower. So they talk about the ordinary prudent driver. To me, that means that it excludes some drivers, because some are not ordinary and prudent.
Right. And perhaps that's the case. But I know this. The state has put forward this notion in its briefing that the test is an automobile, a four-wheel automobile. And if it's not an unreasonable risk of harm to an automobile, then it can't be an unreasonable risk of harm. And that notion has been just flat rejected. A couple of things. First of all, there are a number of cases that say premise liability inquiry is a hazard to the intended and ordinary user, as you say, Judge, of the premises. And I've got cases cited on page 27 of the brief. Texas Department of Transportation versus Sonefield, I think is the way you say it, out of Amarillo, 2023. It's worth me quoting from them.
Sure.
TxDOT's argument regarding motorcycles not being ordinary users of the roadway is without merit. A condition presenting an unexpected and unusual danger to motorcycles is also a danger to ordinary users of the road and may constitute a special defect within the meaning of the act. So motorcycles are, in fact, ordinary users of the road. In fact, Mr. Bumme testified that he and others knew that motorcyclists liked riding in this area around Mathis. So it was certainly foreseeable that a motorcyclist would be coming down this roadway. And as far as in terms of ordinary or prudent, the speed limit was 55. The testimony is no more than the motorcycle going no more than the speed limit, perhaps a little under the speed limit. The testimony and photographs showed that this was otherwise a pristine stretch of roadway. No other potholes, no other conditions, just good flat surface asphalt. Nothing to give any warning that the roadway itself is breaking down until you get upon this very particular spot. And so you have this condition in a place where It's otherwise free of defects. It's not like there was anything ahead of this that would have indicated to any motorist or any motorcyclist that, you know what, you better slow down. It's not like they're having to dodge potholes left and right as they approach this. Instead, they're traveling at or below the speed limit on a pristine piece of highway.
And I asked the appellant in this case about York and those other cases that tell us we need to strictly construe the special defects to excavations and what's the other one? Excavations and obstructions.
Obstruction, right.
And I think one of the elements there is that those things will physically impair you from the ordinary driver from proceeding through them. And I think we have a lot of examples that where depth, I mentioned that earlier,
yes,
was the key to the obstruction or the hole in the ground.
Yes.
Depth was an issue. And we can see the pictures. I mean, nobody measured it, but even in the pictures, it seems like there's areas in there that have not lost any depth.
So let me address all of that, if I may. First of all, I bring this court's attention to the Texas Supreme Court 2023 Fraley versus Texas A&M University. Happens to be a case that I believe they found for Texas A&M University there. But what I point to in that case is their discussion. And of course, they say, you know, special defect is a question of law. That's a given. But it says factors helpful to ascertaining whether a premises condition is a special defect include the condition size, which I think you're alluding to, Judge. The size here is, you know, if you look at that photograph with the trooper, there's two troopers in the photograph that I've put on page 9 of our brief has two troopers, one next to and one in the defect. And I think that gives a scale to the defect that shows that it is probably some 8 to 10 feet wide and 20 feet long. So the area of it is significant. The depth of it, you know, it may be that the whole thing, if you look at all the alligator cracking, what I've just described doesn't include what they call alligator cracking. Alligator cracking doesn't necessarily affect the depth at all. But when you get down to the base, when the base is gone, I mean, when the asphalt is gone and the base is exposed, there is a loss of depth. Now, I would have loved to have had measurements of it, but TxDOT went out there the Monday after this wreck and filled it in, repaired it, and took no photographs and no measurements. And they've done that before. I cite a case in the brief where the trial court, really wanted to bust TxDOT for having done that. And the appellate court tended to agree, but there wasn't any spoliation issue or anything like that. But there are other instances where TxDOT as an agency goes out as soon as they find out about the wreck and cover it up, and they don't take pictures and they don't take measurements. And that's what happened here. That's why we don't have measurements. Now this court in it's the city of Hidalgo.
My point too is, I mean, we don't have to throw common sense out the window, and we could probably look at this photograph and come to the conclusion that this would not impede 99.9% of cars going over it. And I know we're talking about a motorcycle here, but it doesn't really like stop anyone in their tracks. And that's when I see impede, obstruction, excavation, and this seems not to really be an excavation or an obstruction.
I would point your attention in response, if I may. I would point your attention to a couple of cases. In County of Harris versus Eaton, the Texas 1978 opinion, it found that a special defect existed where an oval-shaped hole in the road measured 4 to 9 feet wide, perhaps the same width as ours, perhaps a little less, with a varying depth of 6 to 10 inches, perhaps a little more depth than ours, but it involved a car. And it said sufficiently deep to cause the claimant's car to flip. So the opinion associated the depth, whether or not the depth was sufficient to be a special defect, with its effect on the motor vehicle. And then in City of Weston versus Gaudette, a 2009 case out of Dallas, special defect existed where a hole in the road measured 10 feet in diameter, which is about what we have widthwise, and 5 to 6 inches deep, which perhaps there's places in that photograph that show 5 to 6 inches deep. But here's the important part. Sufficiently deep to cause the motorcyclist to fly off the motorcycle. So they aren't looking at just how many inches. They're looking at, both the Supreme Court and other courts of appeals are looking at, what's the effect on the car? And it's not just bring it to a stop. And one, the car flips, and the other one, it causes the motorcyclist to fly off the motorcycle. Here we have sufficient depth that at regular highway speed within the speed limit, a large motorcycle with two occupants is vaulted several feet into the air. I would propose to you that that is of sufficient depth to be a special defect.
Can you take just a minute and talk to me about unexpected or unusual? Because potholes, I just a knee-jerk reaction, I would see as expected or anticipated, and I wouldn't see potholes as unusual in the general sense.
And
that sets this apart.
Trial counsel for the state did a great job at trial saying, and talking to the jury in Sinton about, you know, here in Sinton, you've got potholes all over the place, which is true. There could be locations in this state where what you say absolutely applies. You know, I drive down Alameda that hadn't been repaved yet every day, and Lord knows I can anticipate large potholes on Alameda. First of all, what I said a moment ago about in the miles leading up to this was pristine highway. No other potholes, no other indication of any problems with this roadway. This came out of the blue. The other thing that I would point to is in the record, Mr. Bomey, the maintenance supervisor, testified that the condition was bigger than a normal everyday pothole. He testified that it needed to be fixed rapidly. It was of such a condition that it needed to be fixed rapidly, hence they fixed it that day. He described it as an obstruction in the roadway that was a hazard to the motoring public. He said it was the type of condition that needs to be repaired as soon as found. This condition was more dangerous to motorcycles than four-wheel cars, and TxDOT knew the Mathis area to be popular for motorcycle riding.
Okay. Now, the plaintiff in this case, he was not familiar with that road.
That's correct. I believe the testimony was he had never been on it before.
So we can't impute the nature of the road to a person who hadn't ridden on the road. So why wouldn't he have a duty to expect there could be a pothole on a road that he's unfamiliar with?
Because of the roadway leading up to this. His experience on this roadway was the amount of roadway that he rode on, the miles that he rode on that roadway before he got to this condition, demonstrated to him that this was a smooth, otherwise unobstructed roadway that showed no hint of any problems being present. He had no reason to think that unusual pothole is going to show up right in front of me on this otherwise pristine roadway right next to I-37. He wasn't riding down Alameda or Ocean Drive. He was riding a pristine highway that the state refers to this as a tier one roadway because it's part of the interstate system, and that's what he was riding on, and that's why he shouldn't be, just because there might be somewhere a condition like this on a tier one roadway, just because of that, he shouldn't be, we shouldn't just knock him out for that reason, because his experience on that roadway was this tabletop.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Did you want the extra time too?
We'll
If you
see.
go over, like, don't worry.
On the issue, briefly, on the issue of actual knowledge, if TxDOT had run this road, like they call it road running when they run these roads to inspect and look for conditions. If TxDOT had run this road every day for 2 months, there's still no evidence of actual knowledge. If we look at the decision in City of Dallas versus Thompson, the court found that employees' proximity to a hazard still does not rise to the level of actual knowledge. When does circumstantial evidence rise to actual knowledge? The only case I know of and can think of is City of Loretto versus Reyes. And in that case, the court said, when can it rise to actual knowledge? It has to be a virtual certainty. And that is the only time I've heard the court or read the court use that phrase, which I would imagine has got to be the highest of standards. As juxtaposed to the court in Sampson, which said, and I'm trying to remember the right word, inference, and I'm paraphrasing, inferences based on inferences lead us simply to more inferences, and that's no evidence. It's a series of inferences. I think that is, sorry, I didn't mean to say, I think that is exactly what we have here in this case.
So if we've got a specific location on the road that has a pothole, which could be caused by a base failure, from what I understand, right? Or it could be caused by just weather and driving. But if that happens over and over and over at the same location, the likelihood is it's base failure, right? If no place else is having this consistent injury, this consistent damage, is it virtually likely that it's base failure?
I don't think so, not based upon the case law. I think,
okay.
I'm sorry, I keep saying I think, but that is not the correct standard. What the courts say is TxDOT needs to have actual knowledge of the condition at the time and the place. And I would direct you to the court's decision in City of Denton versus Paper. In Denton versus Paper, the City of Denton went out, dug a hole, put a sewer tap, I think they called it, backfilled the hole, and 8 days later, a bicyclist hits the hazard that caused by the backfill coming out. Within eight days. And the court said, no, it's not enough. Even though the City of Denton had been there 8 days earlier, they had dug the hole themselves, they had backfilled it, the condition changes in 8 days. They did not have actual knowledge of the condition at the time and the place that that bicyclist encountered that condition. And that is the standard. And it indeed a high standard, but it is the standard.
Now, the appellee went to great lengths to talk about how this was actually met the special defect criteria. And I'm assuming that you disagree, but what in terms of actual depths would you consider an actual special defect? I mean, I know we don't have any measurements here, but we can look at the pictures and it gives us an idea. Tell me where it's wrong.
When will a condition arise to the level that we could consider it a special defect? And I think, I'm sorry, I keep saying I think, and that's not the correct standard. The Supreme Court in Denton, I think, the Supreme Court in Denton has given us our standard: 6 to 10 inches, covering 90% of the roadway, 9 feet wide. As to, I would be speculating to give you a number because honestly, I don't know.
And the they also assert that the accident speaks for itself, that because of the nature of the accident, that it caused the unreasonable risk of harm.
Well, I do have some things to say about that. when examining whether a condition is a special defect or not a special defect, we don't look at the vehicle. We don't look at the subjective experience of the vehicle that passed over. We look at the objective condition itself. A condition is either a special defect or it's not. It doesn't change. It is not a common premises defect for a car and then change for the next passenger who happens to be someone on a motorcycle. The condition is the condition as defined by the courts, and it is not a moving condition. We don't look to see what happened and then look backwards. Under that, then every condition would be a special defect. If a wreck occurred, we would immediately assume because a wreck occurred that it was indeed a special defect, but that's not the measure. It's an objective test. What is it at the time and place of the accident, not who encountered it?
Anything else?
Yes, sir. Any more questions? I will give you back 2.5 minutes.
Any questions? No.
No.
Okay. Then this case will be under submission. Thank you.
Thank you.